Are AVOD and SVOD in competition? Not according to Viacom's CBS, streamers are watching more of both types of service. What's more, they are spending more than their non-streaming peers. Listen on to find out more.
This week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from End Screen Media joins me. And you can't see him, but I can, and he's wearing a nicely starched pressed shirt today, special for our podcast. Thanks for dressing up, Colin.
You're welcome, and I'm also wearing pants, so that's a great improvement, right?
Wait, it's just to say you don't typically wear pants? Is that what you're saying?
No. Just thought I'd dress up a little bit for today.
All right.
A little bit of a change. As we're all locked inside, we're tending to let things slide, so I thought not today.
Well, good to see.
But we got an interesting conversation going on today. We've got some new data, several pieces of new data that we're going to talk about. But we're really going to look at AVOD, SVOD, and how streaming is impacting our lives, right?
Absolutely. And you wrote about the AVOD-SVOD continuum this week, and I think that's where we're going to start the conversation.
Yes, indeed. And I sort of cribbed the continuum word off of, we'll get to that in just a second. I'll get to where that came from. What really sparked the idea for this piece was the fact that I've noticed in the press and in analysis of use that there's a perceived growing tension between AVOD, ad-supported VOD, and virtual ad-supported virtual linear, and SVOD, that there's some sort of competition going on between these two for people's time and people's attention. And that's primarily because of the really explosive growth that we've seen in AVOD usage over the last few months. I mean, this was a crazy claim. I don't know if you saw this one, Will, but Comcast said that after they purchased Xumo in 2020, they said, I think it was in just a few months, that Xumo had increased 10 million monthly active users to 24 million.
I saw that. Yeah, it's incredible.
Which is a pretty amazing number. Now, that's 140% increase in 8 months, which is very extreme. And I suspect that one of the reasons that grew so fast was probably when Comcast bought Xumo, they added some of Xumo's channels to Xfinity TV.
Yeah.
Which exposed a whole bunch of, you know, tens of millions of people to that content. But by contrast, Netflix only grew 8% grew subscribers 8% in the first half. So that's definitely bigger growth there. And we've seen some huge numbers coming out of folks like Tubi. Tubi, which is owned by Fox now, says they have 33 million monthly active users. Pluto TV says that they have 26.5 million monthly active users, and Pluto TV, of course, is owned by Viacom CBS. So we really have seen some massive growth in AVOD usage, and as I said, that seems to have led to people thinking that there's some sort of competition going on between AVOD and SVOD, and I didn't think so. And then I saw something from Marc de Beauvoir, who is, this is a long title, so hang with me, Chief Digital Officer, Viacom CBS, and CEO and President of Viacom CBS Digital. He should really shorten that title. That's a bit long. He was speaking at the Virtual Fall TV 2020 conference. And what he said was about this AVOD-SVOD competition, he said it's not one or the other, it's a continuum. When you think about the history of TV, it's always been a continuum. And that's certain. When I look at my usage of AVOD and SVOD, I use them in different circumstances. And so that sort of sparked the idea for me. I wanted to get out and take a look and see if people really were using it that way. And I found plenty of evidence, Will. So I sort of dived into TiVo's last video trends report, and they talked about common pairings of services. And so they said, for example, that the most common pairing that people had among pay TV subscribers had was that they also had Netflix and were using YouTube, and YouTube, of course, is AVOD. The third most popular was YouTube and Amazon Prime Video. So that's with people that have pay TV. And it's the same. It's pretty much the same story for broadband-only subscribers. Common pairings, the most common pairing, YouTube, Amazon Prime, and Prime Video and Netflix is most popular. And YouTube, Hulu, and Netflix is the fourth most popular. So even before, this was in Q1, and so this was when before the explosive growth that we've seen from March onwards in AVOD services. So even before then, we were already using advertising supported and SVOD services sort of blended together, and I think that's you know, sort of borne out by this data from TiVo. So, anyway, how are you using it? Are you using it interchangeably well, or are you using it in different circumstances? How do you use it?
Yeah, all of the above. Depends on the circumstances. Depends on what I'm looking to watch. I certainly think about times when I'm sitting down to watch something in more of a relaxation mode. That's a Netflix type experience, half hour, an hour, 2 hours. But then you gotta love YouTube for the quick, SNL. I just this past weekend was watching, the SNL opening sketch from Saturday night. And I find I just go back and forth between the two, and I go back and forth between the two depending upon what device I'm on also. So I don't think it's any surprise what TiVo found, that Netflix and YouTube is the most common bundle, because those are the two biggest SVOD and AVOD services respectively.
I
it's
agree.
Kind of what you would expect.
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, that's kind of reflects the way I use it too. One of the ways I use AVOD quite a lot is I'll put on one of the news channels like Newsy or something like that, which is advertising supported, playing in a virtual linear channel. And that seems to work very well for me. But, primetime viewing is very often SVOD and non-ad supported. But I'll tell you what, Will, I'll tell you what's not in the continuum, and that's pay TV, because it seems like AVOD is growing very, very strongly. SVOD also continues to grow strongly, although it's deepening rather than growing more penetrated. The penetration growth is much slower, but people are adding extra services. But it really seems to all be coming out of television. So I went back and I looked at traditional pay TV and linear usage, and I dug into what was going on with that. I found some Hub data that was pretty interesting. Hub said that streaming and pay TV viewers between 2014 and 2018, streaming and pay TV viewers increased from 50% of TV viewers to 69%. So that's a huge growth. And what's more, the proportion of viewing time devoted to traditional pay TV has declined really, really fast. In fact, what Hub said is that in 2020, 60% of viewing time is coming from online and 40% from pay TV. That's a really massive shift from just a few years ago when it was basically the other way around. So it seems like AVOD and SVOD are really taking all their growth out of television and not out of each other. So for them, it's all growth. But for TV, and that portion of our lives is really shrinking. And you only have to look at Nielsen numbers to see that that's happening. In Q1 2018, we were watching 5 hours and 57 minutes, and we were watching pretty much the same in Q1 2020, 5 hours and 56 minutes. But obviously, in those homes that are using AVOD and SVOD, much, much more of that time is being taken up by online. So big transition in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And of course, the pandemic has only accelerated that shift from traditional, you know, call it pay TV or call it linear TV, but shifted, accelerated that shift to whether it's AVOD or SVOD. And actually, Roku had a report out this week, which we want to talk about here also. And one of the things that they substantiated was that the average number of streaming hours in 2020 increased by 19% versus 2019, while pay TV viewing declined by 13%. So I think this actually picks up on a topic we talked about last week also, the NBC Universal report that underscored the percentage. I think it was 50% for 50 plus, all the way up to 76% for 18 to 34 year olds that are now time shifting to on-demand viewing their entertainment TV shows. So I think once you get outside of sports and news, linear's appeal is declining. And that's what I think we're seeing reflected in the numbers, both from Roku and also the numbers that you quoted from TiVo.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that there was some really interesting data in that Roku report comparing spending, expected holiday spending between streamers and non-streamers. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was really the headline of the report. This was the consumer holiday shopping report that Roku and the Harris Poll released this week. It was a survey of approximately 2,000 American adults. And yes, to your point, those that self-identified as streamers, which meant that they watched any streaming content on any type of a connected TV device, they are planning to spend $921 this coming holiday season, compared to those that did not identify themselves as streamers planning to spend $673. So $673 versus $921. And, you know, Roku and Harris Poll didn't release any greater detail on what the profile of streamers is, but I think that it kind of spoke to the idea that those that are streaming are, broadly speaking, I've seen this research elsewhere, a little more upscale and are probably less impacted by the pandemic and therefore are planning a higher spend this holiday season than those that aren't streamers. So that was, I thought, one of the real highlights of the Roku Harris poll. But there were a couple of other things also that I thought were pretty interesting. And one is, again, I think pandemic driven, streamers, 79% of streamers saying that they're going to do most of their holiday shopping online versus 55% of non-streamers saying they're going to do most of their shopping, their holiday shopping online. No surprise, the primary benefits of online shopping being free or cheap shipping, that might as well be substituting Amazon for that, because I think that's really become a proxy for free and cheap and fast shipping. And also tangible discounts was in there, highly ranked as well. Also, importantly, the streaming group was saying that a majority of the streamers said that they now spend more time streaming than they do watching pay TV. And again, this sort of ties into the streaming hours up by 19% versus last year, while pay TV viewing declining by 13%. And also to your point about penetration, 47% of streamers said they now subscribe to three or more streaming services. And that included 60% of millennials saying that they do so. And overall, the report found that 85% of Americans now stream, including 98% of Gen Z and 96% of millennials. So, you know, overall, I thought that Roku / Harris poll really indicating again how consumption is shifting towards streaming, and that streamers seem to have more disposable income, and that they're subscribing to ever more streaming services.
Right, and this really makes me think hard, Will, about some of the things that some of the strategies that pay television providers, traditional pay TV, has put in place. This really seems to suggest that they may not be working too well. And really, I'm thinking of the fact that both Comcast and DirecTV, AT&T, have said that a big strategy push for them is that they're really not going to fight to retain people that call up and want to pay less money. They're really going to focus on retaining the high-spending providers rather than those low-spending. Excuse me, the
high-spending customers.
High-spending customers than the low-spending.
Yeah.
And this data suggests that actually that's not the case. That the people that are streaming, maybe they're not doing as good a job at holding on to those people that value their pay television and spend a lot more on it than they think. I don't know. I mean, there's not an exact correlation there, because, of course, we know that most pay TV customers are also streamers. But the other thing that it really makes me wonder about, Will, is what are we going to see for pay TV numbers in Q3 and Q4? Because, you know, these numbers, the numbers from Hub show that the people that are streaming are just spending so much more time with streaming than they are with traditional pay TV. And you know that they're spending significantly less for those streaming services than they are for the pay TV services. And so when you add those two things together, oh my goodness, what does that come to? I got a feeling when people really start to look at this that a lot more people are going to cut the cord because of this.
Absolutely. This is something that you and I have been talking about for ages now, is that as people shift more of their viewing time to SVOD services that are relatively inexpensive, and then they get their bill for pay TV and they realize, geez, we were barely watching anything this month, that only drives more cord cutting. That drives more people to think about the math, think about what they're spending. Certainly now during this pandemic time when budgets are getting tighter for lots and lots of people, I think it puts that much more pressure. And then, as you say, if the big pay TV services are not going to try to save customers who maybe call in and say, hey, is there something you can do for me? Then they're obviously going to churn out. And so it's a little bit of a perfect storm, I think, right now, that's going to drive up cord cutting in Q3 for sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is, Will. And I got to tell you, I think that this really makes Comcast's strategy with stream TV and with broadband, I think, a pretty solid one, right? Because they don't care as much now if pay TV is doing great, because one of the primary reasons that they want to keep pay television, or at least video services, is an anchor for broadband. Dual play services are much more sticky than single play. And they still have that with their streaming TV strategy there, their Flex TV strategy. And so I really think that maybe they won't be that upset if there is a big drop in their pay TV subscribers in Q3 and Q4. So another big shift, I think, in the market.
Yeah. Who will probably be upset is AT&T. I'm sure you saw the report this week that they're shopping the DirecTV service, trying to unload it. Yeah. And the rumors being that bidders are proposing around $15 or $16 billion. That compares with what AT&T paid for DirecTV just 5 years ago, which I think was a total of about $67 billion. So hard as it is to believe, AT&T could be looking at a reduction in value of DirecTV of about $50 billion over that five-year period. And you got to believe that, as we're talking about here, that if cord cutting accelerates, it only further diminishes the value of the business to prospective buyers.
Yeah, I think so, Will. And I think actually at the time when we talked about that deal on the podcast, I think we both said they pay too much.
Yeah. And the other one is going to be the Time Warner deal, I think, is going to be shown to that they paid way too much for that also, because every part of, and this pandemic, of course, could not be foreseen, but there were fundamental, issues, fundamental drivers of erosion in the Time Warner business. I think they're going to, several years from now, we're going to be having the same conversation about Time Warner and some type of a reduction in value there as well.
I think so. And in the meantime, here we are living in the AVOD SVOD continuum. And,
yes.
Looking forward to celebrating the holidays, leveraging both of those services.
Absolutely. All right, Colin, I think that's all we have time for this week. So good. Good talking about the continuum. I think that might need to be one of our touchstones in future podcasts, talk about the continuum.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for Mr. Dubovoir coming up with it.
All right, Colin, good chatting as always, and talk to you next week. And thanks, everyone, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News and Screen Media Podcast.